information they do have. 4. Perfect decisions aren't possible. Marines on the ground are often expected, though this is not explicitly stated, to make perfect decisions. A decision a Marine on the ground makes may carry significant, possibly even strategic-level consequences, but it is simply impossible for Marines to make perfect or even the best decision in any given situation. The environment is too complex, time is too short, and not enough clear indicators are available. At the higher levels of command, it is widely recognized that leaders should not seek to make the perfect or best decision, but to make a good decision. In fact, General Patton is often quoted as saying, "A good solution applied with vigor now is better than a perfect solution 10 minutes later." One of the Marine Corps' own doctrinal publications states, "Many military problems simply cannot be solved optimally, no matter how long or hard we may think about the problem beforehand. In many cases, the best we can hope for is to devise partial, approximate solutions and refine those solutions over time, even after execution has begun." Later, the same publication states, "What matters most is not generating the best possible plan, but achieving the best possible result." Leaders and planners are called to devise good enough solutions quickly, then aggressively carry out those solutions. The goal is to act violently and quickly to drive the tempo of battle and cause the enemy to react. If leaders and planners are expected to make good enough but not perfect decisions, why are the Marines on the ground expected to make perfect decisions? Many Marines, as well as soldiers and police officers, have been second-guessed, investigated, and disciplined for making less than perfect decisions in the midst of a stressful, chaotic, uncertain, and time-constrained situation. The irony is that the leaders and planners who are expected only to make good enough decisions have significantly more time and information to decide than the Marine on the ground. It is the Marine on patrol, surrounded by potential threats, who must be given the freedom and training to make good enough decisions. This is not an argument for Marines to go out and make poor decisions. The purpose of this discussion is to point out that Marines are only able and should only be expected to make good enough decisions. Therefore, Marines should be given the training to make quick, good enough decisions, which will most often be the best decisions they can make. A better way forward is needed. Marines must be given the tools to observe more acutely, judge more accurately, and decide more quickly in dynamic environments. This is where combat profiling fits in. The decision-making that Marines learn helps them to focus on the most important pieces of information and make accurate, snap decisions based on that information. Marines learn to have a bias for action and be proactive in identifying and dealing with threats. Combat profiling teaches Marines a simple yet effective strategy to use on the battlefield. 5. The better way. The combat profiling way of making decisions is the better way. Heuristics is nothing more than a way of making decisions with little time and information. Let me give a specific definition and then provide a down-to-earth explanation. A heuristic is a conscious or subconscious strategy that searches for minimal information and consists of building blocks that exploit evolved abilities and environmental structures. In simple terms, many problems and situations in life do not have perfect solutions, and the best solution is unknowable. Many situations are so complex, it is impossible to examine every piece of information, or so dangerous that looking for more than a few pieces of critical information risks lives. In these situations, only the minimum amount of information is needed to make a decision. Often, just one piece of information, one cue, is important. A heuristic focuses on the important cue or cues and ignores the rest. A good heuristic decision is made by 1. Knowing what to look for, 2. Knowing when enough information is enough, the threshold of decision, and 3. Knowing what decision to make. A heuristic exploits our evolved capabilities. In the case of combat profiling, the ability to thin slice, quickly pick up on patterns, and determine a person's intentions based on human behavior. Thin slicing means making a determination about a situation or person with a thin slice of information, often with just seconds of observation. But can quick observations be accurate? More than 100 scientific studies have demonstrated that people can make incredibly accurate, intuitive judgments with just a little amount of information. These studies have researched a wide array of quick, accurate judgments made in a matter of seconds or minutes. For example, in just 2 seconds of observation, people can determine whether someone is a violent offender. In determining whether someone is lying, 15 seconds of observation are better than 3 minutes. By looking at a group interacting for only 30 seconds, a person can accurately determine the role of each person in the group just based on body language and nonverbal signals. From contexts as diverse as evaluating classroom teachers, selecting job applicants, or predicting the outcomes of court cases, human judgments made on the basis of just a thin slice of observational data can be highly predictive for later behavior. Army Sergeant First Class Tierney was on patrol in summer 2004 in Mosul, Iraq. He was leading his squad down a street when the patrol neared a car parked on the sidewalk. Inside the car were 2 young boys staring at the soldiers. The car was facing opposite the direction of traffic, and the windows were rolled up. It was 120 degrees that morning. The soldier closest to the vehicle must have felt compassion for the 2 boys inside. If it was 120 outside, the inside of the car must have been a death trap. The soldier asked SFC Tierney if he could give the boys some water. Tierney said no, and then told his men to fall back. As soon as the soldier turned around, the IED exploded. On this day, no soldiers were killed or severely wounded, because SFC Tierney listened to something inside him that said the situation wasn't right. Perhaps it was the fact that they were not greeted as usual by the locals when they left on patrol. Perhaps it was the fact that things seemed quieter than normal. No one had shot at them yet. Perhaps it was the fact that 2 children were inside a car, which must have been well over 120 degrees inside, with the windows rolled up. Whatever it was that tipped Tierney off, it wasn't rational analysis that made him suspicious. Call it a sixth sense, gut feeling, or intuition. Regardless, his brain was processing information and nudging him in a way that bypassed his conscious brain. Tierney says his body got colder. He called it the, you know, danger feeling. One way the brain may drive these decisions is through the amygdala, a part of the limbic system that deals with emotion, memory, and decision-making. When a person encounters something that innately or through learning has emotional significance, they automatically experience an emotional response. SFC Tierney had significant experience in training identifying IEDs and the warning signs of an attack. Although he did not explicitly or rationally think through all the factors that led to his decision, he nonetheless observed various indicators, which his brain was processing outside his conscious awareness, and then acted based on the emotional signals his brain was giving that things were not right. Humans have evolved to make quick decisions, often based on patterns we have observed and learned. If facing someone or something in the forest, our ancestors needed to respond instantly, friend or foe. Those who could read an expression in a flash more often live to leave descendants, including us. Intuition is best used when a person has significant experience and knowledge, which guides that person's subconscious thought processes. Where does this hinky mojo come from? The answer lies in millions of years of human evolution. The middle of your brain. Think back to the Stone Age. Our knuckle-dragging ancestors were both hunter and prey. They needed to forage for food, hunt, and bring home the bacon, so to speak, every single day. So, too, were they the main course for much larger and stronger mammals. It's safe to say that those human beings capable of avoiding being eaten were the ones able to procreate and pass their genes to the next generation of knuckle-draggers. Something inside those human brains gave them an advantage. What that something was and remains today lies inside the limbic system, the middle of our brains. The front part of our brains, above our eyeballs, defines the modern human. This frontal cortex is the place where thoughts, emotions, and senses are experienced and recorded. The middle part of the brain is the limbic system, the place where automatic behaviors live, including flinches, twitches, and for a lack of a better description, our extra senses, which tell us when something is not quite right. The last part of the brain is around the blood-brain barrier, and this part is kind of the engine center. It keeps our heart going, keeps us breathing without thinking about it, etc. It's essentially our automatic systems coordinator. The part of the brain that combat hunters need to trust in themselves and understand in others is the middle brain, known as the limbic system. The limbic system. To understand body language relating to behavioral analysis, it is critical to have a basic knowledge of the cognitive basis of nonverbal behavior. All our gestures, postures, and expressions result from the way our brain identifies and perceives threats, consciously or subconsciously. The most important part of the brain that directly affects nonverbal behavior is the limbic system. The limbic system is unique because, in addition to controlling emotions, it is completely focused on our survival. Due to this important function, to ensure a person's protection from threats, it reacts to the surrounding environment automatically, immediately, and outside conscious awareness. Surviving in hostile, predator-filled environments requires immediate action, and the limbic system is designed to respond quickly and spontaneously. Therefore, the limbic system is also the honest part of the brain, because it provides unmediated responses to external stimuli. The limbic system is a team of structures in the brain, such as the amygdala, hippocampus, hypothalamus, and thalamus, that work together to ensure our survival. The limbic system processes information observed by the various senses, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and continuously and rapidly assesses that information in a very simplistic way, categorizing each stimulus as either a threat or a non-threat. To ensure an immediate reaction to a determination of threat, the limbic system commands a response from the body that is instantly executed. The body will react to a threat by stopping in place and halting all movement, moving away from the threat, or preparing to physically engage the threat. These three responses are often referred to as the freeze, flight, or fight responses. Freeze, flight, and fight. The freeze response. The freeze response is an early survival mechanism that is hardwired into the brains of most creatures. Eyes are naturally attracted to movement, so the early ancestors of humans and other animals could escape detection from predators by simply freezing in place. In common terms, this equates to the deer in the headlights look. Police officers have seen this response from foiled burglars who freeze in place before attempting to flee. Freezing is a concept ingrained into Marines and soldiers who are taught to drop to the ground and freeze when flares or illumination go off in the middle of the night. By simply halting all movement, humans and animals increase the chances of not being seen, and therefore increase the chances of survival. This response also provides time to further assess the situation before executing the next decision, whether flight or fight. Physiologically, the brain also suppresses bodily functions such as heart rate, breathing, and blood pressure, and subdues those vital systems so the brain can take in as much information as possible before making a determination to stay and fight or flee. The flight response. The flight response is the second option the limbic system considers regarding survival. The purpose of fleeing is to create a physical separation from the predator or threat and thus avoid injury or death. The greater the distance from the attacker, the fewer options the attacker has to do harm, and the more time the victim has to respond to further movements by the attacker. In most situations, however, humans cannot simply run from everything that is a potential physical or psychological threat. And so other distancing behaviors have developed to serve the same purpose, such as putting up a barrier, leaning away, covering the face, or turning one's back. Regardless of whether one runs from the threat or distances oneself non-verbally in some other way, the purpose of flight is to increase the distance from the attacker and thus increase one's chance of survival. However, if fleeing isn't a viable option, almost all creatures will turn to the last response. Fight. The fight response. The fight response is the last option considered by the limbic system because of the inherent potential for harm or death. The most ferocious fighters are vulnerable to injury from less dangerous creatures. This potential for harm makes fighting the least preferred response. However, before engaging in a fight, most creatures will attempt to persuade the other combatant to back down without physical confrontation. This is called posturing, and is an attempt to win a fight without fighting. Posturing involves trying to appear larger and more dangerous, and includes shouting, spreading the arms or other appendages wide, puffing up the chest to look larger, or moving around and taking up more space on the ground while appearing unpredictable. However, when a person's back is against the wall, either physically or psychologically, the brain willingly and quickly prepares the body to fight if that is the best chance for survival. Why we need this information. Although there are few threats that we face in today's society that require us to respond with physically striking a person, fight, or physically fleeing from a person that intimidates us, flight, they still manifest themselves in various forms. Think of a situation that you have experienced recently where a person got too close to you, and you felt that they had entered your personal bubble. How did you respond to that invasion? If you took a couple of steps away from them to reestablish that separation, or even simply leaned back in your chair, you executed a form of the flight response. When we feel threatened, we will attempt to distance ourselves from that threat, even if it is only a few inches or feet. Think of another situation where someone challenged you about a topic about which you knew you were correct. How did you respond in this situation? Did you stand up, put your hands on your hips, gesture aggressively towards them, and raise your voice? Those dominant behaviors were driven by the same fight response used by people around the world in response to threats and stressful situations. The way that those responses manifest themselves in observable body language cues, or how we can accurately apply these observations around the world. Understanding the limbic system and its core freeze, flight, or fight responses is the first phase in detecting a threat. It's important to remember that the enemy stalking a Marine on patrol, or a seemingly helpless woman on her way home, is under duress. This stress manifests itself in physical actions. If we look for these particular physical actions when our limbic system gives us the heads up, something's not right signal, we will be able to operate effectively left of bang. But once we start cataloging these behaviors to support our gut feelings, how do we decide when the evidence is overwhelming enough to act? 6. Bias for action. Combat profiling is a method of making decisions in complex, chaotic, hostile environments, where no perfect solutions exist, where decisions need to be made quickly and with little information, and where operators need to make the most of their intuition. Any method of making a decision in a combat environment should drive Marines to make a decision and quickly act on that decision, to maintain a bias for action. Combat environments, or any hostile environment for that matter, require people to be able to recognize threats and patterns quickly, and then act immediately based on that information. To hesitate is often to be lost, whether this means losing an opportunity for a meal or a mate to a competitor, or losing one's life or limb to a predator or otherwise hostile environment. As we have already heard, researchers have demonstrated that good decisions can be made with little information. As we can see, it is incredibly helpful to have thick file folders locked inside the front part of our brains when making intuitive decisions influenced by our middle brain limbic system. But what about the vast majority of people who don't have the necessary life experience to take advantage of those decisions? When we do not have the experience necessary to quickly pick up on patterns and identify good enough solutions immediately, we have to use another way to make quick decisions with little information. This is the benefit of the heuristic method used in combat profiling. Combat profiling is heuristically and intuitively driven. It is built like a heuristic, but applied with intuition. The basic foundation of combat profiling involves quickly establishing a baseline and determining anomalies, as well as quickly identifying threat indicators. Establishing a baseline involves observing only certain types of information, the information that comes from the six domains. Once an individual reaches the threshold of decision, identifying a certain number of anomalies or certain types of indicators, the individual must make a decision. Combat profiling drives individuals to have a bias for action. Before the combat profiler can act and destroy the threat, he needs to detail and profile his target to support and determine his action. But for a combat profiler to identify the anomalies that influence his decisions, he needs to establish a baseline of behavior. 7. Baselines and anomalies. Well, the sheriff came around in the middle of the night, heard Mama crying, knew something wasn't right. Steve Earle, Copperhead Road. Humans effectively live because things generally remain the same. Traffic generally flows the same way, at the same time, on the same days. Our friends behave the same in similar situations. Life works because things have a normal. But when something is off, out of place, or unusual, we know that something isn't right. When something isn't right, whether the situation is a relationship, walking down the street, or on patrol in Afghanistan, then it's likely there is a problem. Unfortunately, most people don't do anything when something isn't right. They don't allow their intuition to guide them. They don't proactively seek to determine what is out of place. They don't step back to observe the situation more closely, or they don't duck. It is only after the situation has occurred in hindsight when they realize something was out of place. This is living right of bang. In March 2011, the 2nd Reconnaissance Battalion sent out the daily patrol to provide route clearance and security for an engineering company that was doing road improvement in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. On this day, things weren't normal. For this province, normal meant people outside, people traveling, kids playing, people interacting. Normal included a man who would sit in front of his house drinking tea every day. This day, no one was outside, not even the daily tea drinker whose house was closed and locked. When something isn't normal, watch out. The abnormal atmosphere of the village, those anomalies, indicated what was to come. As the patrol moved forward, a 250-pound IED exploded beneath a 14-ton, mine-resistant, ambush-protected MRAP vehicle, sending the vehicle flying into the air and injuring the Marines inside. Identifying threats means establishing a baseline and looking for anomalies. A baseline is what is normal for an environment, situation, or individual. Generally, every environment, type of situation, or individual exhibits normal patterns, patterns of movement, emotion, behavior, and interaction. We usually do not consciously consider what these patterns are, because they are ingrained in us. While some of these patterns differ from culture to culture, place to place, or person to person, patterns are a part of life and human behavior around the world. An anomaly is any variation from the baseline, and what we are primarily searching for is anomalies. Anomalies are things that either do not happen but should, or that do happen but shouldn't. During any situation, we expect certain things to happen and not to happen. For example, when a VIP, high-ranking military officer, village elder, etc., walks into a room, we expect individuals to stand and greet the VIP. Any variation from this, individuals not standing as the VIP enters or not greeting the VIP, is an anomaly. Anomalies indicate something has changed in the situation. Often they are indicators that something is awry. Another way to classify an anomaly is based on the presence or absence of something. When something or someone is not present when it should be, or is present when it shouldn't be, this is an anomaly. Now, it is normal for baselines to vary to some degree. Not every person wakes at the same time. Traffic patterns vary slightly from day to day and week to week. This is why we observe significant variation and look for multiple indicators that the baseline has changed. In a complex environment, one indicator is often not enough to act on. Another way to describe the relationship between anomalies and the baseline is that anomalies are things that rise above or fall below the baseline. Anomalies that rise above the baseline are things that, 1, are happening that shouldn't or don't normally happen, or 2, are present that shouldn't be or aren't normally present. Anomalies that fall below the baseline are things that, 1, are not happening that should happen or normally occur, or 2, are not present that either should be or normally are present. Why are anomalies indicators of potential threats? Anomalies are indicators of changes in situations. Granted, not every change in a situation is bad, but any change in a situation needs to be considered with suspicion. As we have already said, life works when things are normal. Humans, societies, nature, etc., fall into behavioral patterns. When something new is introduced into a situation, changes are evident. Whatever is new is an anomaly, and the resulting changes are anomalies because they differ from the baseline. For example, if a new person comes into an unfamiliar area, that person's actions will not be normal in relation to the locals because the person is unfamiliar with and/or uncomfortable in the area. Additionally, the locals will respond to the intruder in ways that are also abnormal, different than how they would interact with fellow locals. The phrase, "something wasn't right," is common lingo among people who have observed anomalies. People say it in hindsight about someone's behavior leading to suicide. Cops use it to describe suspicious behavior, which they might discover was indicative of a crime taking place or a perpetrator. In 2009, a University of California, Berkeley police officer acted on a suspicion that something wasn't right and solved an 18-year-old kidnapping case. What the officer observed was abnormal behavior from children a man claimed were his. Their behavior was emotionally unresponsive, eerie, and suspicious. When trackers observe the ground for evidence of their quarry, the term for whatever they are following, they are looking for anomalies. The physical environment, like the social environment, has a baseline. Nothing in nature looks like a human footprint. Mud doesn't magically appear on the rocks. Rocks don't move on their own. Trackers look for things like disturbances, displacement of natural items, and discoloration of vegetation and other natural items. Inherent in those words is the sense that something isn't right. Combat profilers also seek disturbances in human environment. Like Newton's third law of motion, human actions have reactions. Any abnormal behavior is an anomaly that will result in more anomalies. Combat profilers need to carefully observe for anomalies and act when they identify them. Thankfully, humans act in predictable and usual ways that can serve as a starting point for observing human behavior and establishing baselines. 8. Human universals. Combat profiling works because human behavior is the product of and driven by human nature. The founding principle of combat profiling is that beneath the differences and idiosyncrasies of varying human cultures, there remains a universal constant we call human nature. Irises widen due to certain stimuli. Adrenaline flows. Muscles tense or relax. We smile. We cringe. We bare our fangs. Every person in the world possesses universals that allow us to apply the principles of combat profiling consistently anywhere across the globe. The foundation of combat profiling is the universal similarities in humans, despite cultural differences. Donald E. Brown, Professor Emeritus of Anthropology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, has determined more than 400 universal individual and cultural behaviors and traits. He writes, "Human universals, of which hundreds have been identified, consist of those features of culture, society, language, behavior, and mind that, so far as the record has been examined, are found among all peoples known to ethnography and history." According to Brown, human universals include such things as daily routines, aggression, gestures, and facial expressions. Paul Ekman, a renowned psychologist and leading expert on microfacial expressions and deception detection, has determined 7 universal facial expressions of emotion. Alex Pentland, director of Massachusetts Institute of Technology's MIT Human Dynamics Laboratory, has studied and written about what are called honest signals. Honest signals are biology-based cues that animals and humans demonstrate that can be used to reliably predict behavior. Research is showing that humans across the globe are much more alike than we previously knew and wanted to believe. This is wonderful news for the combat profiler, because he can apply these concepts and methods anywhere in the world and be alert to potential threats. Based on these assumptions, we have identified 9 principles of human nature that directly apply to combat profiling. 1. Humans are creatures of habit. In a study conducted by Northeastern University network scientists, it was determined that human behavior, regarding patterns of movement and mobility, is 93% predictable. By using information collected from cell phones, physics professor Albert Laszlo Barabasi determined that human movement patterns are predictable regardless of distance traveled or demographic categories, such as age, gender, urban versus rural, etc. In short, humans follow simple, reproducible patterns. Not only do people follow patterns, but also humans are reluctant to change those patterns until the behavior becomes unproductive. In fact, even if faced with clear failure, people often follow the same behavioral patterns in the hopes they will work again. 2. Humans are lazy. Humans are generally lazy and will take the path of least resistance. Faced with 2 or more options, the human will generally take the easiest. Given the choice between walking 100 meters through the grass from one point to another and walking 500 meters around the grass along a sidewalk, humans will generally take the shortest path, even though it is not an official or authorized path. 3. Humans are lousy liars. Humans have significant cognitive limitations. It has been shown that imposing cognitive load can help uncover liars. A liar must create a story and monitor the fabrication to ensure it sounds believable while attempting to maintain a believable appearance. While telling a lie, the liar must monitor the interviewer's reaction to assess how he or she is doing. The liar is also taxed mentally because a lie requires continuous effort, whereas telling the truth is automatic. So as thoughtful questions are brought to the table, forcing the liar to spend more mental energy creating a lie and keeping the lie straight, the liar becomes vulnerable to leaking emotions and other indicators that can alert us to deception. Additionally, humans cannot divide their attention well. The more tasks a person divides his attention between, the poorer he will perform any of those tasks. Another example is short-term memory. Humans can only remember, on average, between 5 to 9 items using their short-term memory. All of this is important because, as we observe individuals, reliable nonverbal indicators will leak out and indicate their emotions, attitudes, and intentions, particularly when their attention is focused on something such as completing their mission, getting close to their target, thinking about their next lie, etc. 4. Humans will run, fight, or freeze. Humans are driven by fight-or-flight responses, which translate into certain autonomic responses and behaviors. We will discuss these responses later, as well as the autonomic responses to stress. For now, it is sufficient to say that our bodies often exhibit uncontrollable, automatic reactions to our emotions in response to the situations we are in. Because these reactions are automatic and uncontrollable, they are reliable indicators of the emotions and attitudes of a person and can clue us in to how that person is feeling in any given situation. Furthermore, when we understand the fight-or-flight response, we can predict a person's behavior in any stressful or threatening situation. 5. Humans telegraph their intentions. Emotions are difficult to control and are often spontaneous responses to a situation. As Paul Ekman points out, we don't often have control over our emotions, and our cognitive brain is not always in control of our emotions, at least at first. By understanding the behaviors associated with specific emotions, we can identify people's emotional states and changes in relation to their emotions. As Alex Pentland discusses, honest signals are behaviors mainly driven by the subconscious. By reading people's honest signals, we can predict what people will do. On a small scale, we see this principle play out in boxing and basketball. Good boxers can pick up on the ways their opponent telegraphs his next move. In basketball, good defenders look for ways in which their opponent telegraphs their next move, whether the player intends to go to the right, pass the ball, or take the shot. Poker players look for tells in their opponent's behavior. Combat profilers look for people telegraphing intentions to do harm. 6. Humans are predictable. Humans are not generally spontaneous or random. This principle is related to the second principle above. As much as we think we are predictable and random, we really are very predictable and follow regular patterns. The study that tracked 10,000 people via cell phone concluded that people display a very high degree of regularity when they travel, because they return to only a few very frequented locations. A more mundane example is the game Rock, Paper, Scissors. Research shows that even in games that rely on being unpredictable, humans are, in fact, very predictable and not at all random. We involuntarily mimic others, and we predictably attempt to come back from losses, at least in Rock, Paper, Scissors, by doing whatever beat us in the last round. This means that our enemy will set patterns that, if we take the time to analyze, we can identify and use to our advantage. Once we know the enemy's pattern, we can practically predict his next move. Unfortunately, this also means that we are not as random as we think, and that the enemy can identify our patterns to predict our next movements and actions. Anyone who has operated in Afghanistan or Iraq can verify this reality. The enemy places the same type of IED in the same locations because we use the same routes at the same times. What we need to realize is that the enemy is also using the same routes, the same hiding places, and is conducting the same activities at the same times. 7. Humans are not good at multitasking. In general, humans only look natural when naturally focused on doing one thing. Furthermore, multitasking is a myth. This relates to the principle above that humans have significant cognitive limitations. People can only do one thing at a time well. When they attempt to do more than one thing at a time, focus, ability, and productivity suffer. When your attention is divided and you're concentrating on doing more than one thing, your behavior and speech will appear unnatural. For instance, if someone is actually reading a paper, then their attention and mental energy will be focused on reading the paper. If, however, that person is only acting as if they are reading the paper, and instead is attempting to conduct surveillance, then that person's behavior will not look natural. Or imagine, for instance, conversing with someone, attempting to discreetly watch someone in the crowd of people around you, to get some type of subtle direction from that person. The person to whom you are talking will not be focused on the conversation. Instead, his mental energy will be divided, his action will be jerky, and his speech will seem choppy, broken, or slower than normal. His brain will have to switch back and forth between activities. As Alex Pentland explains, when there are several conflicting commands coming down from your higher brain centers, each requiring our body to take different sorts of actions, This interferes with our ability to act in a smooth, consistent manner. He calls this aspect of behavior consistency. 8. Humans are generally clueless. Humans in general lack situational awareness. As you go about your day, take a minute and simply watch the people around you. Generally, people walk with their heads down, or they are focused on one particular thing. People rarely look around at their surroundings, with two exceptions, good guys and bad guys. And even then, these two types of people become focused and lose their general awareness at times. If they are looking around, they usually don't pick up on what is happening around them. Often, when conducting our own observation training off base, we establish overt observation posts on the top floor balconies of buildings, or we sit in the open to observe a particularly busy location, often for long durations, several hours. We often begin by discreetly watching the behavior of people around us, in an attempt to pick up on behavioral patterns while not drawing attention to ourselves. However, after some time, we are usually blatant in pointing out observations. We often end up literally pointing. Particularly in today's security-concerned environment, you would assume that someone would confront us for conducting surveillance. However, rarely does anyone even look at us, let alone think we are doing anything unusual. Yet we are doing the exact same thing that a criminal or terrorist would do in preparation for a crime or an attack, and we aren't even attempting to disguise our behavior. Furthermore, because of our cognitive limitations, when a person is mentally focusing on something, whether an activity, conversation, or thought, they lose sense of their surroundings. 9. Humans can't do very many different things. There are a limited number of dimensions in human behavior. Human beings are finite creatures. Our bodies react in certain ways to stress and other stimuli. Our communication is limited, basically to verbal and nonverbal. We rarely act in isolation. Rather, we interact with the environment around us. Although there are a number of ways to view human behavior, we break human behavior into 6 different but interrelated dimensions. We call these the 6 domains. These domains range from autonomic to deliberate and personal to social. They are A. Kinesics, conscious and subconscious body language. B. Biometric cues, biological autonomic responses. C. Proxemics, interpersonal spatial interaction. D. Geographics, patterns of behavior within an environment. E. Iconography, expression through symbols. F. Atmospherics, collective attitudes that create distinct moods within an environment. Combat profiling is based on these domains. Part 3. Detail. Headline. Taken from newspapers on January 1, 2000. Explosion at LAX. Millennium bomber kills over 100, over 300 injured. But a bomb didn't explode on January 1, 2000 at LAX. No one's New Year's Day was interrupted by breaking news of hundreds dead. No one read this horrible headline. New Year's Day in 2000 did not become an American tragedy because of one person's suspicious behavior and one customs agent's quick thinking. In fact, September 11th wasn't supposed to be the opening salvo of Al-Qaeda's attack on the West. A year and a half before September 11th, before the war on terror became a frequent conversation at America's dinner tables, a 130-pound bomb was set to detonate on a luggage carousel at Los Angeles International Airport, LAX. The only reason that headline was never written was because of a woman named Diana Dean. Dean was a customs agent at Port Angeles, Washington, and was an inspector for people crossing into America on a ferry from Victoria, British Columbia. On December 14, 1999, just before 6 p.m., she approached the last car she was to inspect that day. As she took the driver's license and passport from a man she believed to be Benny Norris, She immediately realized something was wrong. There was something about Norris that Dean later described as hinky. She couldn't figure out exactly what was wrong, but he wasn't acting like the other people she had inspected throughout her career. As she asked fairly simple and straightforward questions about where he was going and how long he planned on staying in the country, he became extremely fidgety and jittery, began to sweat, and seemed unnecessarily anxious. There was something not quite right about Norris or the way he was moving around inside his car. Because of the man's suspicious behavior, Dean conducted a search on his rented 1999 Chrysler 300M, which should have been fairly simple, because it was already searched as it was loaded on the ferry in British Columbia. As she went through the trunk of the car with the help of some other inspectors, she found many green plastic bags filled with a powdery substance underneath the cover of the spare tire compartment. There were also some black boxes, two pill bottles, and two jars with brown liquid in them. Their first assumption was that Norris was trying to smuggle drugs into the country. The plan was to confront Norris with what they found, and as one inspector began to guide him to his car, Norris shuddered. Before they got to Norris's car, he took off running into the Port Angeles parking lot. When they finally detained him, it didn't take long for the customs agents to learn his real name was not Benny Norris, and those weren't narcotics in his car trunk. The person they caught on December 14, 1999, was Algerian-born Ahmed Rassan, and the green bags were more than 130 pounds of explosive material. The Al-Qaeda-trained operative was on his way to Los Angeles to conduct surveillance on LAX for 2 weeks and to execute his strike on New Year's Eve. What would have happened if Dean hadn't noticed the cues that something was wrong with Ahmed Rassam and that his behavior was outside the baseline she had established? She didn't use the terminology we discuss in this book, but she observed his kinesic cues, realized they were off, and took action. This happened 21 months before September 11th, before there were legitimate concerns that Americans could be attacked at home. Her observations helped stop the Millennium Bomber from reaching his target and conducting a terrorist attack on American soil 2 weeks left of Bang. 1. The Six Domains. To make quick decisions, combat profilers need to know what to look for. Current battlefields bombard operators with massive amounts of information. Without the ability to filter out the nonsense and non-critical information, Marines and soldiers cannot effectively identify threats. Combat profiling focuses on the important details of human behavior, which can be viewed from six basic viewpoints. We label these dimensions the six domains. First domain. Kinesics is the domain that involves people's conscious and subconscious body language. This is important because humans give off signals through their postures, gestures, and expressions that communicate their current emotions and possibly their future intentions. Being able to pick up on these signals is critical to proactively identifying threats. See the section titled Kinesics for an explanation of our use of the term. Second domain. Biometric cues is the term we use to describe the uncontrollable and automatic biological responses of the human body to stress. These physiological responses are key to understanding a person's emotional states and changes. Third domain. Proxemics is the domain that allows us to understand groups of people by observing interpersonal distance and identifying an individual's relationships and intentions based on how they use the space around them. While proxemics is often discussed within the larger category of nonverbal communication, we separate it from biometrics and kinesics because proxemics allows us to understand an individual's behavior as it relates to the surrounding people. Proxemics also permits us to understand group dynamics. Fourth domain. Geographics is the domain that involves reading the relationship between people and their environment. This helps us to understand and identify who is familiar or unfamiliar with the area they are in, and how people move around their surroundings. Because human behavior is predictable, combat profilers can anticipate where people will go and what they will do in certain areas. Fifth domain. Iconography is the domain that allows us to understand the symbols people use to communicate their beliefs and affiliations. Gangs, insurgents, terrorist groups, and individuals use iconography as a symbol of group unity for rapid recognition of other members, and to communicate their beliefs to the larger populace. Observing these symbols, particularly the increased presence or even sudden absence of them, can be key to a combat profiler's situational awareness. Sixth domain. Atmospherics is the domain focused on the collective attitudes, moods, and behaviors in a given situation or a place. Combat profilers can read the social or emotional atmosphere of an environment and pick up on the changes or shifts in that atmosphere that often signal that something significant has changed or that something is about to occur. Understanding the collective atmosphere can key combat profilers into those individuals whose attitude, emotions, and behavior do not fit the given situation. These individuals are anomalies. The six domains capture the most significant aspects of human behavior in simple terms that aid combat profilers in establishing baselines and identifying anomalies. 2. The language of profiling. We'll be the first to admit that this terminology is a mouthful, and the terms are not easily discernible to the average person, either. However, by using the terminology of the domains and breaking nonverbal communication into its subcomponents, a police officer can effectively explain a decision to stop and search a person to his boss without being too specific. He witnessed a proximic push as the person tried to avoid his patrol. A biometric cue, the individual's hands began to shake when questioned, and kinesic indicators, the person began patting and touching his waistband. These observations would lead an officer to believe the person had a concealed weapon and would be able to confirm his assessment by searching the individual. By adding a degree of deceptiveness and quantifying specifically what was observed, the police officer can be confident in his decision because it was based on grounded observations regarding the suspect's behavior, not inaccurate racial, gender, age, or religious biases. When it comes to a person's ability to read body language, there are two types of people. The first is the person who was forced to learn the skill early in life because recognizing threats through behavior became the best chance for survival. People who grew up in dangerous neighborhoods or in abusive households had to learn to identify threats, or they paid the price for missing these signals. The second group of people learned somewhere later in life and probably learned through dedicated self-study. In American schools, we are taught to read, write, and speak English, but are never taught how to read body language. Because the people in this group are likely not the naturals, they need a structure for consolidating the material and experiences they are using to develop themselves. The domains provide this framework. We live in an age of information overload, and observing human behavior is no different. Although the terminology we use may seem foreign, it gives combat profilers an accurate and sufficiently specific set of terms to focus their observations, rapidly categorize what they observe, make good decisions quickly, and effectively communicate those observations to others. Combat profilers use the six domains to focus their observations on what is most important: human behavior. 3. Kinesics. Everything a person does is created twice, once in the mind and once in its execution. Ideas and impulses are pre-incident indicators for action. Gavin De Becker. Kinesics is the study of body language and accounts for a significant part of all interpersonal communication. Our use of the term kinesics may seem too general. For example, we could refine our discussion even further by differentiating between body movements, kinesics proper, and nonverbal communication that involves touching, haptics. However, incorporating additional terminology would create unnecessary distinctions and would hamper rapid observation and effective communication. The purpose of our categories, the six domains, is to provide accurate and functional language for individuals to make accurate observations and communicate those observations effectively. Although the term kinesics was originally coined by the anthropologist Ray Birdwhistle in the 1950s, it is still used by contemporary researchers and provides an accurate way to describe the movements of the limbs, head, and torso. Studying body language accomplishes two objectives. The first is to identify those people who don't fit in and thus warrant further attention. The second is to predict people's behavior based on the subtle behavioral cues that give away their intentions. These subtle and subconscious acts, rather than obvious movements, matter the most. When compared to the behavioral baseline, smaller signals often provide the information needed to make smarter, faster decisions in combat. While researchers disagree as to what percentage of total communication is accounted for by body language and other nonverbal means, there is no doubt that a significant portion of all communication is transmitted nonverbally. To ignore such a significant aspect of communication would be foolish. Marines and other security personnel constantly interact with people from other cultures, many of whom do not share the same language. It is more important than ever to effectively read a person's intentions through body language and other nonverbal signals. The science of body language can be used to separate the sheep from the wolves in sheep's clothing. Several critical issues guide the framework of this part of the book. 1. This is a chapter on body language. Numerous scholarly and popular resources exist on the topic of body language and nonverbal communication, including book-length treatments and extensive articles. The purpose of this discussion on kinesics is to emphasize the use of behavioral clusters and to describe how using clusters enables combat profilers to quickly and confidently interpret body language. 2. Most gestures in and of themselves are not important. What's important to the combat profiler is a gesture in the context of the baseline. 3. Combat profiling focuses on clusters of behavior, or multiple cues, rather than single gestures. 4. All the information provided in this chapter will be about observable indicators below the shoulders. Understanding individual behavior is the foundation for combat profiling, and to do this accurately, we will ignore facial communication. Because of these reasons, this chapter does not discuss individual gestures. Instead, combat profiling relies on observing clusters, which are groups of reinforcing gestures and other nonverbal indicators that communicate the same message. These clusters are then compared to the baseline to identify anomalies. Why not the face? The human face is incredibly expressive and is used both consciously and subconsciously in communicating emotion. In all six of the possible clusters that will be discussed below, facial expressions and emotions could be used to confirm and supplement the behaviors listed. However, facial expressions have been left out due to some inherent limitations. The first limitation is that to identify facial expressions accurately, you must be relatively close to the person you are observing. This can be useful in a setting such as an interview or conversation, but not necessarily in situations in which some type of safety standoff is required. Marines should be capable of recognizing and identifying kinesic clusters up close, but more importantly from longer distances for security and safety reasons. Since we discuss clusters without referring to facial expressions, we have given combat profilers the ability to determine people's emotions based on behavior indicators, which can be observed from a distance. However, facial expressions can still provide a significant amount of information to a combat profiler and should be observed to supplement the information garnered by observing the body language related to the clusters. The second limitation to facial expressions is that a true emotion, which could be displayed as a micro-expression, may only be present on the face for 1/25th of a second. With an emotion displayed for such a short amount of time, there is a high chance that a Marine on patrol in a combat zone will miss it with so many other actions taking place around him. Just as with the first limitation, this does not mean Marines and other security personnel shouldn't be trained to identify these expressions, since they can be some of the most honest indicators available. but operators need other indicators that may be present for a greater length of time. Universal behaviors and clusters. Because Marines operate throughout the world, combat profiling focuses on body language and analysis that is universally applicable.